Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening on this frosty evening if you're anywhere in the Northeast or the Midwest. Another example of global warming, which it sort of is, but that's a whole other conversation. And we're going to have a fascinating conversation in a kind of a different way of examining energy tonight. We're going to be talking to feng shui expert Catherine Hilker. And I think I'm going to have a lot of fun. I think you will too. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. All of the stuff that I send out and my website and everything has on it four phrases. Everything is energy. Everything is connected. Everything is conscious. Everything is interactive. And, you know, some people look at that and go, what are you talking about? Sounds really out there, woo-woo mystical. And the truth is that every mystical tradition all over the planet for all of recorded history, which is something like 9,000 years, has basically said everything is energy. The physical world somehow is a part of that energetic reality. But 100 years ago, one of the most famous and influential scientists of our time, Albert Einstein, basically came up with the same thing. He discovered that light was both energy, frequencies of vibration in the electromagnetic spectrum, and also was particles, was physical stuff. I like one quotation from his notes that said, "It seems in the math that light is lumpy." Hadn't quite gotten to the point where they understood that it was individual discrete particles, but they understood that there was something going on that was not just vibrations in the electromagnetic spectrum. So we still don't, after all this time, after the addition of quantum mechanics, after everything else, being able to look at things at the subatomic level, what science keeps coming up with is everything is energy, and as a matter of fact, we can't quite figure out why anything has mass or is physical. They just don't have a good answer for that. So here we are walking around. All of our senses are tuned to mass and physical stuff. You know, the desk sure seems solid, and I'm sitting in a chair, and I have a body, and all that stuff seems really solid. But as Einstein said, it's all an illusion, albeit a persistent one. Somehow, everything is energy. And that starts, you know, if you start thinking about that, you start getting punchy. But when you start working with that conception, it gets even more interesting. The work that I do, remote healing, involves shifting my consciousness from the physical aspect of the world. And time is a component of space, and therefore when you shift out of the physical world, there is no time and there is no space. You can tune into anything. Everything is energy. And then by tuning into a person or a place, I can see the energy of it and do stuff with it, make improvements for people, take care of things that are a problem for them. And you know, people often say, that's weird, like I didn't notice that, like somehow I wasn't around and I didn't notice that. It was pretty strange. But it's only weird if you don't know that people have been doing it all over the world for thousands and thousands of years. And it all of this is a very mature technology. But one of the things that recently has struck me and has become one of the things that I rail about online is people can go through high school, get their high school education, and because physics is associated with advanced mathematics, in order to do the computations that let you understand the mechanisms of physics in a scientific way, you need to learn fairly advanced math. Because of that, the principles of physics are not being taught. So you can go all the way through high school and graduate and never get the basic principles that Einstein established 100 years ago, or the basic principles of quantum physics and this whole dilemma of everything being energy, even though it looks solid, and that time is a function of space, and all of these things, which you can grapple with as concepts without the math, and people don't get to grapple with them and don't get to understand them. And then, of course, they run into somebody like me and they go, oh, you're a woo-woo mystic. And it's like, well, no, actually, if I'm a woo-woo mystic, so are all the quantum physicists. Because the stuff they say is even weirder than the stuff my teachers taught me when I was apprenticing. So we live in interesting times. We live in an interesting situation. And as a segue to tonight's guest, we're going to talk about a whole other way of looking at energy, which was established in China thousands of years ago. So none of this is new, but some people haven't heard of it, I think, is basically what I have to say. In any case, that's tonight's Metaphysical Musing, and I want to introduce tonight's guest, Catherine Hilker. Are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for being here. I expect to learn a lot and have a whole lot of fun.
Good.
Because feng shui is one of those languages that I sort of understand because it's about energy, but I'm not fluent in the language. Mm-hmm. Kind of like astrology is very similar to me. You know, I understand the principles, but I don't speak that language. Mm-hmm. And so I know bits and pieces of feng shui, and I would love to understand the basic principles of it and how it can be used in daily life.
I was listening to your musings, and I was thinking to myself that even though there is this dilemma that you're presenting, I am starting to see a big shift towards people really beginning to sense and understand the non-physical, which is a big part of what feng shui is. You know, feng shui has a lot to do with the non-physical field, force field, for lack of a better word, or qi, that exists in everything, including non-physical things.
Right.
Trying to say inanimate, and it didn't come out right. So, you know, the whole idea of feng shui is paying attention to that field, that field of qi, and how it affects space and land and, you know, environments. So it very much is in line with what you were saying, and there is a whole kind of movement that's moving towards opening up to these ideas, which mm-hmm. I find very exciting.
And it's being incorporated into almost all the real estate transactions that I know of going on right now. In addition to staging the space, people are dealing with the feng shui of the space. Mm-hmm. I know there are many more corporate environments in which a feng shui consultant is brought in either before the place is designed or to deal with issues or enhance the business. So I think it's got a whole lot more acceptance.
Yeah, and I think when I'm introducing people to it, they're relating to what I'm saying because they are experiencing what I'm talking about. And what I mean by that is when I say that, like, you know, we were kind of joking back and forth about clutter with our emails back and forth, but, you know, when I start talking about clutter and why it's important to really address it, you know, light bulbs go off because people understand the physical impact that clutter has. That's just one example of how non-physical things, you know, the force field of something, affects us on a personal level.
Well, one of my teachers always said, if you want to grow spiritually, clean out your closets. That the stuff that you can't get rid of is the representation of what's going on inside you that you haven't dealt with. And at the point that you can let it go in the physical, you make room for something new. You've let go of that old thing.
Exactly. And our physical spaces are, you know, conscious and unconscious manifestations of ourselves.
Right.
So, well, I mean, one of the examples that I share with people when I do my talks is a woman that I worked with that was a very successful corporate woman with a very beautiful put-together home. Everything was in place. You know, everything was really lovely. And then I get to her master bedroom, and then her master closet was a disaster.
Right.
And it provoked a conversation. And what she ended up admitting to me was, yeah, she looks put together on the outside, but inside she is in internal chaos.
Right.
And it showed up in her space.
Well, anyone who lives with a teenager, especially a teenage girl, who may look totally put together on the outside, knows that the room is that they live in is total chaos.
Well, and that makes sense because they're going through a huge change.
Right. Right.
In their maturation, you know, in their maturing process.
Right.
So it makes sense.
And that struggle that many parents have of trying to straighten up your room, trying to get all, you know, like, I gave that up.
Well, and when I work with clients, I actually suggest to parents not to interfere with the children's rooms, you know, unless they have their permission, because it's an important part of them becoming independent. So
as long
as it's within reason, of course. And science projects aren't growing in there or something.
Yeah, we don't have science projects, but we do have dust bunnies that are procreating.
Yeah.
So better the dust bunnies. So there are so many questions about feng shui, and I just want to remind people that we've started a new way for you to communicate with us and ask questions during the show, which is using Twitter and sending a direct message to @FarkasFiles, or just tagging your message with the hashtag #FarkasFiles. And we actually did get a question about landscaping, and we'll get to that as we go along. But one of the things I ask all my guests is to give a sense of your story and your path and your walkabout in getting to where you are in your spiritual work and doing this kind of work.
Yeah.
How'd you get here? You know, I know your guidance counselor in junior high school did not suggest this.
No, and actually I kind of came around it. I came to it kind of a roundabout way, because out of high school I started working right away, and I was going to college at night and majored in accounting in business administration. So I worked in corporate America for many years, 17. And I got to the place where I couldn't do that anymore, and I started a little art business. And then I got to the place where I couldn't do that anymore, and I was about age 40 when that happened, which is already 15 years ago. And I realized that, you know, there was something was happening where I needed to reinvent myself again. I had this very distinct kind of feeling in my life that was very familiar to me because I've already done it a couple of times. And I didn't really know what it was, but I have always felt a strong connection to space. Even when I was a little girl, I wanted my room to be very specifically set up, and I wanted my things to be neat and organized. And I have always been very sensitive to space, and I've always loved decorating and making space beautiful. So I just kind of put it out there, you know, out into the universe. I'd like to do something with homes. And I saw a television program at the time on the Health Channel, and it talked about feng shui, and all it did was it showed a before and after picture, and I just lit up. It's like, okay, I didn't even know what it was, but I saw the effects of it, and that's what really launched my feng shui career. And so from that show, I started researching different feng shui programs, and I did my formal training, and, you know, that was about 10 years ago, and that's what launched it. Literally.
Well, you know, it's always fascinating how people feel that urge to do something and then it unfolds in strange and serendipitous ways. But you've taken it to a very deep level because you're doing a very high level of feng shui that many practitioners don't do. Doing house clearing and clearing land and doing other very intense work, removing negative influences. So on the one hand, I want to hear a whole lot more about the basics of feng shui, but how'd you get into that deeper work?
Well, the first place I studied was at the Western School of Feng Shui, and they had this program, like this extracurricular program, I'll call it, for their graduates, and Denise Lin was going to be one of the featured teachers that was going to introduce people to space clearing. And I didn't feel ready to do that because I had just studied feng shui, but they turned me on to Denise Lin. And then I decided to, when the timing was right, to study with her. And Denise Lin is one of the two women that I know that have made space clearing popular in the West. I mean, her and Karen Kingston kind of really expanded it. And so I had the great opportunity to study directly with Denise. And Denise comes from a indigenous background and a shamanic culture. And so she brought a lot of those kinds of rituals into the space clearing work that she taught her students. And so I was turned on to her through the Western School of Feng Shui. And that's kind of how it happened. And again, it's the same thing kind of happened was, I don't know what this is, but my body is lighting up. I need to pay attention to this.
Yeah, it's interesting for people that make their decisions from their head, saying that kind of stuff, they look at you askance and go, what are you talking about? And for anybody who allows their life to be moved by the forces of the universe, by both what's inside of you and what responds to it, makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and what I mean, another thing that I'm pursuing too to deepen all my work is the study of human design, and human design basically gives a person their mechanics of how they go about making things happen in their life and what part of their body is their authority to choose from, and it's never a person's head.
Right,
it's always the body. So what you just mentioned validates what you just said through the human design system.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things I keep learning over and over again is there's only one thing going on. There are just different ways that people structure how to learn it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're all learning the same thing, but with different systems. Mm-hmm. And one of the ones that fascinated me was looking at the Hindu way of looking at the human body, with chakras and nadis as the energy centers, and you look at the Chinese medicine way of looking at it with acupuncture meridians and acupuncture points, and if you overlay them, it's the same stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's mapping the same system, but there's a completely different set of names and different ways of looking at it,
mm-hmm.
and you still get spectacular results, even though they were developed at different times in different places and seem to be different. They're not.
Yeah, and the point is, really, our bodies are our body compasses are our guide to making choices in our life. Our heads are only there to support us in providing information, but we're really not supposed to make choices with our heads. We're not.
Right.
Which is very bizarre in our culture.
Well, it's
in our mainstream culture.
Right, right. And mainstream culture is very much about being in your head and doing things in an analytical way.
Mm-hmm.
And analysis should be, and I think this is also an Einstein quote, should be the servant of intuition, not the other way around.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Intuition is where you get the information you need, the direction to go, the impetus for whatever it is. And then you apply intellect to it to improve it, to understand it, to work with it, all the rest of it. And if the intellect is the part that's leading the show, there really isn't anybody leading the show.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like having your accountant be the one that's telling you how to cook.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, an accountant
and our heads can justify anything.
Right, an accountant with no sense of smell, actually.
That's funny. Yeah, our heads can justify anything, but our bodies are always consistently true.
Right.
Yeah. Our bodies won't manipulate, but our heads have the ability to manipulate. Just the nature of that, the kind of energy that exists in that space. So I kind of got off on track there a little bit. But
No. We do this all the time.
Well, one of the things that I also wanted to say was that what you had said at the beginning of your show about everything being alive and connected and a couple of other things is very much the tenets of feng shui. I mean, that there's three tenets of feng shui that you'll see in all the different types of feng shui schools and practices out there, is that everything is alive, everything's connected, and everything is changing. And paying attention to those three fundamental universal truths is how you work with your space.
Right.
Because if your life has changed, your space has to change. What you do in your space impacts your personal body. Your personal body impacts your personal space. You know, the inanimate objects are alive with the associations that you have with them, or the history that it's had, or, you know, what the story that it tells you. And all those things are really important.
Absolutely. I'm just looking at one of the tweets that just came in from, I know I can say this with a straight face somehow, two women and a hoe.
I love her business name. It's brilliant. Jan is a friend of mine.
Ah,
and she owns
okay.
Two Women and a Hoe.
That explains a lot.
Yeah, she's a gardener.
Right. And she asked about using feng shui for landscaping and what people can do, what the first thing people can do in their home. But what she just said was human design is the bomb. Everyone should experience it.
Yeah.
I want to thank her for being the first person to actually be tweeting live during the show, which is exactly what we wanted to have going on. So what if you had to give the 2-second or 1-minute summary of what feng shui is and how people need to look at things differently, what's that 1-minute summary?
You know, that I often get asked that, and I always, over the years, I still stumble when I get asked that question, because it's hard to summarize it. But basically, right. What I would say is, it's paying attention to the non-physical attribute of physical objects in the way that you arrange them and use them, and it also is paying attention to the cycles of Earth and the seasons, and bringing in those elements into spaces as well. So we're aligning with the seasons, we're aligning with the natural elements of the earth, and we're paying attention to the non-physical chi that exists in all things.
Right, which is a very shamanic approach to life in general and your space.
Absolutely.
So, you know, as somebody who walks through the house and asks the plants how they're doing today,
Well, I mean, there are studies that have showed that plants experience stress and their chemical composition changes.
Yes,
when stress is introduced in the environment.
Right. And there's actually been some very interesting things with that. We're getting close to the break, and I want to make sure people know how to find you. So what is the best way for people to find you online?
Yes, my website is my name, which is Catherine with a C, Catherine Hilker, Hilker.com. And I have a Facebook page, Twitter, they're all my name.
Keeps it simple. I love it.
Yeah, I branded myself long before I knew what I was going to be doing exactly, so I'm glad I did it that way. It was a happy accident.
Yep. And you have all, as we're going along, talk about all the different services and approaches that you have to things. What I hate when my train of thought derails, leaving debris all over the place. So,
I can relate.
Especially when there's too many things going through my head at once.
Uh-huh.
We're going to be going to a break in just a minute, and we're going to come right back. And what I want to start with is that whole concept of what's the basic way that people can work with feng shui in their space, in their garden. You know, how do you do this? What's the sensibility, and what are the tasks involved? Because I think it's kind of daunting and very different and very Chinese, and why would all this Chinese stuff work for me here? That kind of thing. So that's where we'll come back after the break. So we're going to take a short break for some absolutely fun and interesting messages. And we'll be back with Catherine Hilker here on the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere. Stay with us.
Odds of a young girl being discovered by an industry insider while singing to herself pumping gas? 1 in 300 million. The odds of the daughter of a clergyman from Severn, Maryland spending 11 weeks at number one on the U.S. singles charts? 1 in 19 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of selling over 40 million records? 1 in 800,000. And the odds of this musician and performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 150. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen.
Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the...
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg.
Ha-ha, I win. Whoa! Ah!
Sassy! Johnny fell down the well.
I'm wet.
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl. What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold.
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound, health, and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
My sport is football, but my passion is education. My name is Nnamdi Asamoah, and this is how I live United. I see too many kids miss out on moving up. Kids who could go on to college, but just need that extra little push. So every year, I take promising high school students on a college tour. We check out the dorms, the library, meet some professors, find out where the best late-night grub stops are. It shows them that there's a whole world beyond their own. But what's even better is that most of these kids decide college is for them. I'm Nnamdi Asamoah. I show kids that a higher education means a brighter future. So when it comes to living United, I don't just wear the shirt, I live it. Join me.
It takes all of us working together to make a difference. Find out how you can live United for Education. Give, advocate, volunteer. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with my guest, Catherine Hilker, who is a feng shui master and is telling us all about how this mysterious Chinese system works. So how long ago was feng shui developed? I mean, this is a very old, mature approach.
Yes, you know, thousands of years. You know, there's some historical references to it back 6,000 years, but certainly a lot of material back 3,000. And you know, again, it was indigenous people paying attention to how they relate to the earth.
So this is, and in many ways related to the development of Chinese medicine, which uses a lot of the same kinds of principles.
Yeah, I mean, the five-element system in feng shui is the same one that's used in acupuncture. It's the same five elements and the same attributes, and it's applied to the body versus the space.
So one of the questions I've heard many times is, okay, so there's this weird Chinese stuff that seems to do good things, but why should I be doing it here in wherever it is that you live in the 21st century?
I mean, the reason I would say that is because everything in your space affects you in some way, everything. Nothing is neutral. And it really is important to understand if the things in our space are enhancing our well-being or detracting from it. And that's really the reason why you do it.
Well, what does feng shui mean? What does that word mean?
The literal translation is wind and water. And the idea is that the two life-sustaining forces on earth, the air we breathe, the water that we drink. So the symbolism of it is, you know, it underlies everything, which is about qi and energy. Same things that you were talking about even with your previous guest.
Mm-hmm.
So paying attention to the energy of things becomes important for a couple of reasons. First of all, it creates a much healthier space for ourselves, which helps us be our best. The other thing that it does is it gives us opportunities to create visual representations of the things that we want to create in our life so we can manifest what we love and what we want to do. So if you bring something like that into your space, you have something that kind of sends a vibe into your home that's always there. And through that process of you having a connection with a visual representation of something you want to create, it helps manifest it. You know, so that's another layer of it. And basically, though, it's about creating vitality so that we can be healthy. And by being healthy, we can be our best to go and do what we have to do out in the world.
And your friend, the gardener, whose business name I will not repeat at the moment, is saying...
She'd be happy for you to repeat it. She loves it. I love it, too.
Two women and a hoe. Does clutter present itself the same way in a garden as it does in a home, and does it affect things the same way?
It can. Certainly, I think one of the things clutter does in any environment is it's extreme yin energy, which means it's decaying energy. And if you have a lot of it, then it will translate back to the body. So you can even see when there are homes that are landscaped with a lot of decaying energy, you can sense it because of the experience you have being in it. So in that way, yes, clutter in the landscape or in the garden can affect the environment very much the same way it does on the inside of the house. And an example is, you know, very often I can tell when there's a hoarder by looking at the outside of their house. There's going to be very distinct, extreme stagnant energy that just resonates from that space. And it's outside in the yard and everywhere else. And there's physical markers that it's there as well. So the short answer is yes, it affects both.
I know feng shui is in many ways about, like most of Chinese medicine, about energy either flowing or stagnating, either being... opening up places where energy is blocked.
Yes.
And looking at how energy flows through. So How do you manage that stuff? What are the mechanisms for doing that? And how do you know?
I mean, one of the things, because I've been doing it so long, I can sense it. But one of the things that I do for people that don't, that don't have the same level of experience as me is I say, kind of squint and imagine that, the open spaces in your home is like a river and watch to see how a river would flow through here. And it kind of would give you an idea how chi moves. And so how you arrange furniture can redirect chi. You know, how you could have chi or furniture so close together you can't move through it. I ask people to pay attention to, do you run through the space? Do you run down the stairs? Do you stop? Do you procrastinate when you're in this space? You can also have clues about what's happening with the chi, the quality of the chi, but by how you're behaving in the space as well. Mm. So, for example, a space that has extreme yin energy, which is, stagnant, it would be very difficult to, very often you'd procrastinate, you feel lack of motivation, you don't even want to be in there. And then on the other hand, if it's extreme yang energy, which is very aggressive, in those spaces, do you notice you get into a lot of arguments with people, or you can't sit still, or you can't relax? Those are all clues that help me and my clients interpret what's going on.
So I know, as somebody who does space clearing from a shamanic perspective, how I see that stuff and how I clear that stuff. But how does feng shui deal with that?
Well, there's a couple of layers with feng shui. A lot of my feng shui clients were dealing only with the physical layer, which means that we're rearranging spaces, we're adding color to walls that are vibrant and are healthy for them. We're making the mouth of chi, which is the front entrance, alive and welcoming. So there's that layer. But then there's the other layer, which is the energy non-physical layer. So when we're working at the basic feng shui layer, a lot of stagnant energy can be addressed by just getting rid of things that we don't use. And sometimes that's enough to shift the energy layer.
Mm-hmm.
But there could also be energy layers that have to be shifted in other ways. It really depends on the situation. But I have found that some people, by making the space their own through changing the entire, like they buy a new home, it has the previous owner's energy in it, but they change it so much and make it their own that it eliminates the previous owner's energy without me doing a space clearing.
Right.
That's possible. So it just depends on what's going on and how serious the previous energy is in terms of attaching to the space.
Well, you actually do something which I find fascinating, which you call inner feng shui. And that, as I'm understanding it from a little bit that I read, is applying the same principles to personal issues. So how do you work with people with that?
What I've started to do, and that's where the human design system showed up, because as I started working with my clients, what was happening is they started asking me to do one-on-one work with them. Because, as you know, working with space is very intimate. And what I found is that there needs to be a process where you have to work on yourself and your space at the same time to have the best results. And so I started doing empowerment coaching, looking for opportunities to help a person get rid of blocks, using EFT and other types of tools. And it led me to human design. And the human design tool now helps me get the person in touch with how they go about making the changes in their life that in itself empowering. So teaching them to learn about themselves in a way that helps them work through their own blocks or resistance to making things happen or getting rid of the shoulda, woulda, coulda voice. Because what I'm finding, when people are getting turned on to their human design, the shoulda, woulda, coulda voice has less power, because a person, I'll understand why I think like that when that happens, or this happened, I do this when this happens. It's because those are my mechanics. And if somebody doesn't like it, well, there's, and I don't want to say too bad, but, you know, I do want to be respectful, but it's like, if they don't like it, it's like, well, there's not a lot I can do about it. And it gives me permission to be myself, of course, gracefully. And that really helps me with my shoulda, woulda, coulda voice. I've found that to be very invaluable. So my inner feng shui work is kind of morphing into that direction.
Mm-hmm. Well, just for your amusement, somebody that I worked with years ago called those three voices the Udda sisters. Shoulda, woulda, and coulda.
Yeah, I love it.
So you just tell the sisters to quiet down.
Yeah, shut the hell up.
Exactly. There are several things that have been posted on Facebook recently with Daffy Duck and Donald Duck, Bugs Bunny, rather, and Daffy Duck, basically saying, if you don't like me, don't be around me. And I always point out that the guy who voiced those two characters and probably wrote a lot of the dialogue was from Brooklyn, so there's some attitude there.
You have a Brooklyn connection, I take it?
Oh, I do. That, you know, is an ingrained level of sarcasm. I've toned down the accent and the sarcasm a whole lot from when I was a kid, but you can't take the city out of the kid.
Yeah.
And it serves you well.
It does. Like you were talking about with your previous guest about boundaries. And
right.
Yeah. I mean, it's helped me be clear about not feeling bad about why I need to create the boundaries I do.
Right.
Because it's good for me, and it's how I'm designed to be in the world. So.
And we live in a culture that in so many ways is built on codependence, mm-hmm. and good boundaries is the opposite of codependence and probably mm-hmm. the feng shui cure for it.
And if you think about it, feng shui in your space is about boundaries too. I mean, you're setting up your space in a way that energy flows well and it's enjoyable to be in, and you share it with the people that you love. And, you know, I saw a boundary connection. I didn't really articulate it very well, but I saw a boundary connection there.
Sure. And as I'm thinking of the feng shui of my rather small apartment where every room serves multiple purposes, it's setting those boundaries when there's a bedroom with a corner that's an office and a living room that's another corner that is another office and that kind of thing gets more complicated.
It does. And if you're sharing that space with somebody else, it gets
right.
even more complicated because – you know, because you don't have, you know, a space that is just entirely your own. I do recommend when I work with especially couples or partners that each of them have their own space that the other person has no say over, because we need
mm-hmm.
that. And when you live in a small space, when you're sharing with somebody else, it makes that more challenging.
Right. And teenagers are extremely challenging because stuff is strewn everywhere.
Yeah, and we live in a culture where we collect things. So, I mean, one of the things that I've been doing as I've been getting older and wiser is simplifying my life and getting by with less. And I'm finding it very helpful for me in feeling more peaceful in my life too.
Right.
So, because when we have things, then we have to take care of them and we have to make room for them. And I've found that through some challenging times with my husband losing his job and going through really lean times, it's like I'm already living the life that I've longed for, and I have everything I want. And it wasn't until that happened that I really realized it. It's like, I don't need stuff. I really don't. It's great to have it. I'm not saying don't have it, but I don't need it. So it's kind of shifted for me in the past
right.
few years with some of the challenges that we've had in our lives, which is a good thing.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. One of the challenges for me is books, because I've collected books all my life. And I look at books as carriers of the energy of whatever the book is about.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have something that you want to be learning about, mm-hmm. things that you want to study, having the books in the room is a way to keep that energy with you. So that you can move in a direction. On the other hand, if you have lots of stuff that are from other times in your life that are irrelevant now, it doesn't really have any energy for you in this time and place.
And it's also getting in the way of you bringing in new energy. I mean, one of the things I will say to people, like if I worked with you and you have a lot of books, I'd say, how many of these books do you have represent the old David?
Mm-hmm.
And if you said many of them, I would ask you, why are you keeping them? What is it about the old David that you cannot let go of? Because if you're hanging on to the old David, and I'm just using you as an analogy.
Sure.
If you're holding on to the old David, how can the new David show up? You have to literally make room for him. And you make literal room for him by clearing out some of your books so that the new can come in. And maybe the new, or you have an area focused in your library with your books where you've pulled out some books that are no longer relevant for who you are, and instead replace them with new ones about what it is you're aspiring to become,
mm-hmm.
or learn, or learn about.
Right.
Because we do. We have to make room for the new in our lives because our lives are always changing. And as we change, our space has to be updated as well. Because it makes it harder to create the new life if we don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's just an energy principle.
Absolutely. I'm just thinking of all the transitions I'm going through in my own life at the moment.
Yeah.
And that's exactly the process.
And for me, I just get these natural urges to start purging and rearranging. And it just happens naturally for me. And then it's amazing what shows up on the other side of it. Something always shows up on the other side of it.
Right.
And I've learned to just trust that process. Now, for me, it's never been very difficult for me to get rid of things. And I don't have sentimental attachment to things. So that process has always been quite easy for me, which is not the norm. I know that's not the norm. But it's made it easier for me to make space for the new.
Right, right. Yeah, the typical household stuff goes in, but almost nothing goes out unless the kids outgrow it. And even then, since kids like to have the old stuff around, you just collect more and more stuff, and the old stuff never leaves. Definitely.
Yeah, we considerably downsized, so we had to literally do a major purge to downsize.
Right.
And it was a difficult process, and it was a really good one too, and it really prepared us for the big changes that happened in our lives with losing jobs and things like that. We were ready for it. Little did we know that's where it was heading.
Yes, indeed. When I was apprenticing for about a year and a half of the time I was in California, I lived in a very tiny pickup on the back of a Datsun, a camper on the back of a Datsun pickup truck. So
that's a simple life.
It's a very simple life. I had a night job at a psych hospital and my camper. I would sleep in the parking lot. Life was good.
Yeah. I love the quote, a simple life is its own reward. That's the truth.
Right.
And as I get older, that's where I'm moving more and more towards. So, and my feng shui philosophies and work help support it too and keep me in touch with it.
So what's next for you? What are you doing these days? Where are you? What direction are you going in?
Well, I know I've mentioned this a few times, but right now I am studying the human design system, and I'm on track to go all the way through the analyst training program. So that's my focus at the moment. It's taking enormous amount of time and energy for me because it's a very complex and deeply layered system, but it's correct for me, and I'm really excited where it will take me. And I use that system now. Even with my feng shui clients, it helps me help them. So I've been focusing on.
Right, and you're doing feng shui, but also doing the inner feng shui counseling with people.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because sometimes people want both or either one, and I let them choose what they want. So, I'll have a feng shui client that doesn't want space clearing, or I'll have a space clearing client that doesn't want anything else, or somebody that just wants one-on-one work, or somebody that wants all of it. So I just let people come to me and present to me the need of the hour, and I offer them options and then let them choose.
And how do most of your clients find you?
They find me from the internet. My website has been, I've had it for over 10 years, so it ranks well, and through referrals, of course. Social media has been really helpful for me, and I do advertising in a small little, the Natural Awakenings paper. You probably have a version of it in Massachusetts.
Yeah, every area has their own version of that. Yeah.
And I've been advertising in that publication for so long, they've grandfathered me in and I have a really good rate, so I advertise in there.
which is always wonderful.
Yeah, I was shocked when I found out what the new rates were because I was recommending people to do it. So I had no idea. So I'm grateful.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. So trying to figure out how to summarize feng shui for people in such a way that they'll be excited and to try it out. So
could I share a quote with you that I share with
absolutely
my audience? It's a kind of a scientific one that you might appreciate. It comes from Lynn McTaggart, who is from her, you know her, right?
Yeah.
And it comes from her book, The Field. So this, I love this quote because this kind of sums up what feng shui is and life, really. It says, science is saying that everything that vibrates possesses intelligence and everything vibrates. And there is a central intelligence that everything vibrates to.
Yeah. That pretty much sums it up. I actually met Lynn for 5 minutes at a conference. She's pretty amazing in the way she puts concepts together and can talk about them. So I want to thank you so much for being on the show.
I appreciate the invitation.
Our everything you always wanted to know about feng shui but didn't know who to ask show. And my guest tonight is Catherine Hilker, who is a feng shui and human design expert. And I'm so glad that you came on the show. Give people your website again.
It's Catherine with a C, Hilker, H-I-L-K-E-R, .com.
Fantastic. And you're also on Facebook and Twitter. And where else can people find you?
Pinterest, LinkedIn. If there's a social media site, I'm there. I love all the social media stuff.
Yeah, somebody just told me about Pinterest, and I was like, what?
Yeah, there's not a lot of people my age, I'm 55, that love the whole internet like I do. But I say, it's like, finally, technology has caught up with me. It's like, I love it. Texting, it's like, don't call me, just send me a text, you know?
Right, exactly.
I love all that stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, Catherine, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I so appreciate it.
And
invite me back. I'd love to. I know we just barely scratched the surface tonight.
That's always true. So we're always looking for people that can come back in one of our group conversations. And you'll definitely be on my list. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
You too.
Take care.
What a wonderful evening with Catherine Hilker. And if you're interested in finding out more about what I do, you can find that at househealing.com. And cleverly hiding on the contact tab, you'll find every conceivable technology for getting in touch with me, including my online calendar. I do a 20-minute assessment and reading that's complimentary, and we can take a look at what's going on with you personally or with your house or business or a situation that you're in and see what's going on and how my work might be helpful to you. So please get in touch. Again, remember, from now on, we'll be communicating during the show with Twitter. You can send a direct message to @FarkasFiles, or you can just tag things with the hashtag, the number sign, the hashtag, and FarkasFiles. And I'm watching that feed. Thanks so much to Jan Bills for being our first live tweet person on the show, which was a whole lot of fun. Where we started and what the whole show is about is that everything is energy and everything is connected and everything is conscious. And if those ideas are still new and complicated to you, it's time to find out more, because it's all around us. So until next week, this is David Franklin Farkas here on the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Thank you one and all for being with me, and come on back next week. Have a good week.